Happy Friday, everyone. Good to be back here as always. I love finishing my week this way. Shout out to all the regulars in the chat. Appreciate y'all being here again. We're here with John Haar, our co-host, and Q and Alec from the Swan Private Team. And we're going to break it all down for you today and just riff on what's happened in Bitcoin this week and in the broader markets as usual. John, how's it going today, man?
I mean, brutal bear market since Monday. I don't know if they're going to turn around. I'm feeling pretty low about Bitcoin's future. And, you know, that things just turned on a dime. You guys are going to have to talk me off a ledge here.
Sell.
Just pack it up.
Sell.
Hey, to Alec's credit, I remember Alec talking about Bitcoin vol on a show in the last month or two. And he mentioned, he's like, you think we're not going to get another tariff headline at some point and that could send the price lower? You know, we'll see how much lower it goes. We're at like 117.6 as we're talking here. But credit to Alec for saying the tariff headlines have not gone away.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah, I mean, it's happened this, I don't know if this is the third or fourth time at this point, but I'm an active tariff dip buyer. Absolutely.
Yeah. Thanks, Trump, for the dip. Buy the dip. What's going on, Q?
We might as well just pack it in. Bitcoin is dead. It's time to just start working at McDonald's and just get ready for a very dark winter.
Yeah, I mean, this tariff tweet and the price action this week plus Core V30 went live. So Bitcoin is doomed. Bitcoin is definitely doomed. If you haven't been following along the Core V30 debates on Twitter, it's gotten pretty heated out there, and it's not going to stop here. So I'll keep following along, and I have a kind of a nuanced view of it. There's a lot of extremism happening on both sides, but I think the view, as it typically is a little bit more nuanced than the extremists on either side. Interesting debate. We don't have to get into it here, but
I have a fun take on it. A very short, very simple, and not technical. There are two phases of a bull market or a bear market. And to me, what defines a bear market is when we as Bitcoiners just fight amongst ourselves because there's nothing better to do. So if there was ever a signal or sign that we're not yet in that bull market, it's just Bitcoin Twitter. Just hop on and just see what you see and confirm.
It's true. Although there is one historical counterpoint here, which is the culmination of the block size wars, which, you know, is like a two plus years in the making, which, you know, that happens all through the 2017 bull market. Bitcoin Cash fork was like August 2017 or something. Yeah, that was a crazy year, man. The block size debate was more contentious than what's going on in the core 30 debate. We'll see how long it lasts, but I don't think it's going to get that extreme because we're not debating consensus rules here. These are mempool policy level stuff. So it's not as existential a debate as I think some might think it is. Okay, let's just start with this Trump tariff tweet from this morning. This is the news that'll be in this driving markets today. And I pulled out it was a very long tweet. I pulled out the bottom of it, which is kind of the bottom line, where Trump says that China is basically, first of all, just to establish numbers, China has a lot of monopoly over a lot of rare earths, and the U.S. does as well. But a couple of these, dysprosium and other elements that are related to mining, are for electronics and defense stuff, so weaponry, et cetera. And they control about 90% of the production of these rare earths. And China sent a letter to the White House announcing that they are planning to tariff these very important and precious rare earths. And so Trump has responded saying, for every element that they have been able to monopolize, we have two. I never thought it would come to this, but perhaps as with all things, the time has come. Ultimately, though potentially painful, it will be a very good thing in the end for the United States. One of the policies that we are calculating at this moment is a massive increase in tariffs on Chinese products coming into the United States of America. There are many other countermeasures that are likewise under serious consideration. Thank you for your attention to this matter.
Kind of sign off.
favorite
part. So what I've seen is that there are tariff proposals up to 200% on some Chinese goods. And that, I mean, obviously is a massive number. So I, you know, my take here is this is how Trump negotiates, you know, tariff deals or just economic deals with other countries. And, you know, it's not going to be implemented to that extreme, in my opinion, or if it is, it won't last for long. So what do you guys think is going to happen with this, these tariff, I guess, warnings or threats, whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, it's a lot of headlines and like political posturing at this point in time. So I don't think people should take them too seriously. It does move markets as we're seeing today. And just to call it out, I already said the Bitcoin price is like mid 117K, but the NASDAQ is down 2.4%. S&P 500 is down 1.75%. Those are big intraday moves. And the main headline that is causing markets to go down is this one. So I'm not denying that these types of things have real impacts on the market in the short term, but nothing's been decided. Like, it's a tweet from Trump saying we're thinking about doing this. I saw there was a date of these new measures. If they go into effect, it would be December 1st. So like, even that is, you know, a month and a half away. A lot could happen between now and then. So, and there will be many more headlines on this stuff between now and then. So it's going to lead to volatile markets. Does it change the Bitcoin thesis or the debasement trade, as we'll probably get into, that even the Wall Street banks are talking about now? I don't think this changes that thesis whatsoever.
I think one of the interesting things to point out is, as we've said, this is the third, fourth kind of big tariff announcement, big correction in markets. It's interesting to see that this same type of reaction plays out. I feel like I understand the playbook, just seen it multiple times, but we're still seeing just this knee-jerk reaction from these tweets. As you mentioned, these wouldn't go into effect until December. I just find it interesting the investor behavior is to immediately sell off. To, you know, I'm just curious what even drives that type of behavior. If it's just extreme fear of these headlines or what it is. So that's still my biggest question I'm trying to figure out, because yeah, you see it 3-4 times, it's like it's the same strategy. Why is everyone still freaking out about it?
Yeah, I think too, if we haven't realized it yet, let's just spell it out clearly. Whatever Trump says as the initial stance he takes is rarely the final stance that the country takes and that the markets accept. He tends to take this extreme, really harsh position that startles the market, even though we should have learned by now that this is not where he even wants to or thinks will end up, but this is a negotiating play by him. So time will tell. And of course, you know, once we get these details finalized, the markets will rebound accordingly. I think this is the best example of the old Warren Buffett saying of, you know, when others are fearful, be greedy. And when others are greedy, be fearful.
It's just the low ball. You shoot really low, you meet somewhere in the
exactly.
Middle.
So every one of my fantasy football league mates who is listening to this, that's why I send you those low ball offers. That is not where I intend the trade to end. It's just a starting place for negotiations, as I've learned from my president, Donald J. Trump. Thank you for your attention to this matter.
All right, let's take a look at some more market stuff. I think we can move on from the Trump tariffs. We'll see how it plays out. But as Alex said, we have several examples from the past year or so, at least this calendar year, of how Trump is using these tariff threats to negotiate deals. So I agree. It's probably how it's going to play out, and there will be some deals struck for these rare earths. This is a great tweet from our friend Vijay. You know, first of all, Vijay, you cut off the x-axis here, so I had to look it up on TradingView. this starts in 2023, the beginning of this bull cycle. And he is highlighting in red here these long, sometimes short, but three very long periods of consolidation from January 2023 at the left side of this chart up to the present day. And I think we may be consolidating in this band again for a little while. We kind of double topped within this band. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see some more time here. But it's interesting that I think VJ's claim here is that since this cycle has been characterized by long periods of consolidation, followed by the powerful rallies that you see, that it's clearly different to the kind of parabolic moves in previous cycles because it's taken longer. So it's like there's a, you know, smaller parabolic move compared to previous cycles and then long consolidation, then like a smaller parabolic move and then consolidation. And he claims that this is much healthier. This is Bitcoin monetizing. I think it has something to do probably with the much larger financial entities that are getting involved in Bitcoin, the much bigger on-ramps that exist during this cycle, ETFs, et cetera. You know, the treasury companies have been a way for massive pools of capital to start getting exposure to Bitcoin price. So we've got these much wider on-ramps into Bitcoin. And so I think you're seeing a different pattern. And Vijay Boyapati, author of The Bullish Case for Bitcoin, which you should read if you haven't, says that this is a healthier cycle for Bitcoin's price. What do you guys think about this?
I think it shows true adoption of Bitcoin, right? I've talked about this in part of my thesis, why things may be different now. As you know, we have a different class of investors. There's more education happening. We have different people talking about Bitcoin, Michael Saylor, Larry Fink, all the likes in that class. And if you go back a few years, you know, most people are buying Bitcoin because number go up. Bitcoin's going up. I need to jump in and buy. Where this new investor class is gaining a lot more education. They're learning what Bitcoin is actually used for, especially when we're talking about this debasement trade. Hey, we understand there's a problem with our money and Bitcoin is a solution to that. So I think it's showing that precisely is people are buying into Bitcoin, not for, hey, this thing's going to $1 million tomorrow. It's, hey, I need to buy some more neutral reserve assets. And, you know, I'm starting to learn more about what Bitcoin actually is. And I agree, we'll probably still see parabolic runs when people decide just to, you know, hop on board for the number go up action. But yeah, to me, that's exactly what this is telling us, since people are truly understanding Bitcoin at a deeper level.
Nice.
I also just think that, like, I'm having this conversation with a client right now who, despite playing around with our little like IRA tool that we have on swanbitcoin.com/IRA, I believe it is, where you can like map out what your returns would be. So check it out. If you don't have a Swan Bitcoin IRA, like, you can kind of see what those type of returns are. I walked him through that. And I really stressed, like, let's be conservative. Let's not get overzealous. Let's not plan for best case. Let's plan for maybe middle or worst case to be surprised on the upside. And then he went ahead and asked some AI tool to, based on the CAGR of Bitcoin, what the returns will be in 20 years when he can access it. And then the returns are astronomical. And so what I'm really paying attention to, where we're at right now, is the market cap of Bitcoin. And to say that we're going to go parabolic and Bitcoin will go to $1 million per coin means that the market cap of Bitcoin roughly 10x's from here. But a 10x market cap means we're more valuable than any individual company in the publicly traded markets by a wide margin. So the question has to be, where do we get that liquidity? I am of the belief that we get that liquidity when we really turn on the money printers, and we haven't yet. But this slow and steady climb up validates a lot of the theses that we've been talking about for 6-7 years in the Bitcoin space, that once we discover the price of Bitcoin for a fair market value, you can start to use this asset differently and expect it to trade differently than historically during a real price discovery period. I'm not saying that we're done with price discovery. I'm just saying in a period where there's no aggressive money printer, it's just going to be slow and steady up, down within a smaller band range that we're maybe accustomed to, especially having seen the returns that Bitcoin can have during the post-halving bull market phase.
I think you guys covered it well. I won't add too much more. I'll just say something we have said on the show before. I think we are past the period. There could be Bitcoin bear markets. There could be big percentage declines. But I think the percentage declines are probably not going to be 70% in magnitude. And they're probably not going to coincide with a narrative of Bitcoin's dead forever, which is what happened in 2022. So I think that is what changes going forward. And I think all the things you guys said, the chart that you showed, is evidence of that.
All right, let's move on to gold price signal. John, I'll throw this to you, but this is from another VJ tweet. He wrote, I didn't screenshot the tweet, but I'll read it. Alan Greenspan used to watch the gold price like a hawk. Whenever it rose, it was a signal that monetary policy was too loose and the Fed needed to tighten. Today's Fed is doing the exact opposite, while gold is sending an ancient message: debasement is coming.
ominous. Yeah, this is, we'll probably touch on gold a few times in this show. This is one of the charts. There's a Mohammed El Aryan tweet this week where he's posting something about, instead of looking at stock indices in nominal terms, look at them priced in gold. Which is, just to step back for a second, it's kind of unbelievable to see someone as mainstream as him posting that. Usually that would have been like a weird Austrian economics blog post somewhere. It's like, price the index in gold, and like 10 people view it or something. Now it's like on the radar of mainstream people. So yeah, gold, $4,000 an ounce for the first time ever. It's outperforming U.S. stocks. And I have to underscore that point too, because U.S. stocks are the best performing stock market in the world. So just imagine what U.S. stocks are doing, what gold is doing relative to other countries' stock markets over long periods of time. And last point, I'll just say, I'm sure you guys all know the stat that Bitcoin is the best performing macro asset for 8 out of the last 11 calendar years. This year, I think it would actually be pretty funny. I'm kind of rooting for it to be one slot behind gold, because it makes the same point. It's like, okay, Bitcoin didn't win it this year, but what did win it? Gold. Like, it's the debasement trade. So we'll see if the year ends this way, or if Q4 is wildly bullish. It would also be funny for Bitcoin to just edge out gold by a little bit. Peter Schiff will cry in his basement or something.
I was going to say, somewhere in New York, Peter Schiff right now is singing, dancing, "I was right, I was right." And it's that meme of the guy celebrating getting third place while first and second place are just kind of like side-eyeing him like, bro.
Yeah, I think this show's really...
Sorry, Alex. Sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead,
Alex. I was just going to speak to kind of that debasement trade thesis. I think it makes sense for gold to run first. You know, it's what everyone's familiar with. I think it's just proving that sound money thesis. So, you know, it's going to make the point for Bitcoin even stronger when more and more folks pay attention and catch on. Like my previous point, just takes a long time for people to understand Bitcoin. Not only is it everything we don't understand about money, it's everything we don't understand about computers, kind of tying those together. So I think people are starting to learn about money, and they're going to catch on to Bitcoin, which is the digital side of the gold sound money thesis.
Let's take a look. I didn't get this Mohammed El Aryan tweet up there. Oh my gosh. Screen share. Okay. So here it is, John. I'll go ahead and hand it over to you. This is the chart that you mentioned.
Yeah. I mean, it just basically shows, this is 2000 to 2025. And we'll just focus on the right. I mean, the point is kind of the same for MSCI as an equity index. So the left side shows all world excluding the U.S., the right side is MSCI US, so it's showing US stocks. But basically, if you look at US stocks nominally, they're going up. People probably feel great about their stock exposure that they've held for 25 years if they've been alive that long enough to be investing. But then if that's priced in dollars, if you price it in gold, it's actually, gold has outperformed US stocks since the year 2000. Now, you can't say that gold has outperformed over every period. There is some like cherry picking to this. U.S. stocks were very high in the year 2000 from the tech bubble. So this is picking a period where the starting point was pretty high for U.S. stocks. There's like, if you picked the year, I think it was like 2014, 14, 15, when commodities were collapsing everywhere. Gold, oil, copper were all collapsing. If you guys were following broader markets at that point, you know, if you pick the point then for gold, like gold is clearly going to outperform from that period. But if you picked when gold was like $2,000 an ounce in 2011, I think it was, then gold won't look as good. But either way, I mean, it's a 25-year investing period and gold has outperformed U.S. stocks. That should tell itself. And it's not the only period. Like I said, there's multiple periods within the last 25 years where this is the case. And it makes the same investment case for Bitcoin.
All right, another one from John is a tweet that John made this week. Most countries saw the highest level of inflation in 40 years from 2021 to 2022, and yet it barely reduced global debt to GDP from 355% to 325%. Got some analysis for this one, John?
For sure. So I think this is like alarming because one of the, I'll put it in quotes, benefits to inflation is that you're supposed to inflate away your debt. Like that's a part of the playbook. If you look back at the last time the US had this much debt, post-World War II, post the Depression, there's four things you can do to reduce your debt to GDP. You get economic growth, like real economic growth, that increases the GDP, so you're increasing the denominator. You reduce your spending, you know, reduce your debt, or at least reduce the pace you're adding to the debt. That would reduce the numerator. You increase your taxes. Again, that in theory could reduce your debt, reduce the numerator. Or you inflate the currency and you just get nominal GDP growth. So you're increasing the denominator that way. And post-World War II, the US did all four of those things. But there's some issues here. Politicians can't just legislate real economic growth into existence. Real people in the market has to do that. And then the problem is post-World War II, we actually did reduce spending. It was a war. It ended. We reduced spending. Today, that's not the case. Like the things we spend money on, there's not an end date to Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. It's not like, hey, guys, let's get to this point, defeat the Germans and the Japanese, and then we can stop spending on these things. That's not the case today. We have a chronic spending problem. And then number three, there's like zero political will to increase taxes meaningfully to reduce the debt. And then even if you do that, you probably reduce GDP. So it could be counterproductive over certain time periods. So what does this arrive? Where do we arrive with all this? Is like number four is basically a given. Everything I'm saying here is like a long explanation for why nothing stops this train. So number four, inflation debased the currency is a given. But what's so amazing about this, that chart that we had about the debt is like, we had the highest inflation through 2021 to 2022. For most countries, certainly the US, it was the highest inflation in 40 years since the 70s and early 80s. But then you look and you say, like, did we reduce our debt to GDP very much? The answer is no, like barely made a dent in it. So if you want the debt, the inflation to actually reduce your debt to GDP, you have to stop adding so much debt. But as the blue bars show on this chart, we just keep adding and adding and adding debt. So we barely made a dent in global debt to GDP. Again, long-winded way of saying nothing is stopping this train. Debt to GDP is going up and to the right. So yeah, if we haven't made the case for the debasement trade already, hopefully that just helped.
I could not help myself but very openly laugh at the idea that policymakers can't control the economy despite their best efforts because they damn well believe they can with the policies that they try to
perform. You guys aren't socialists?
Hey, even in socialist California, there are those of us who see the truth.
Believe in free markets.
Yeah. Crazy concept.
You know, socialism done so well over the years.
Hey, but that wasn't real socialism.
Yeah, right. Just like this isn't real capitalism. But you're never gonna get the pure expression of either one. So
No.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. Thanks. That was great analysis. Nothing stops this train. Fiscal dominance. Lynn Alden has been beating that drum for quite a while now. And the numbers back her up. That's why she's beating the drum. She doesn't take strong stances like that unless there's strong data to back it up. Let's see. Okay. Here's a chart about business cycles. And we had to look at this, kind of get some more information on this chart as well. So the bars along this axis here in the center are about business cycles, basically. So they're using this Trade Something, this publication, made this sort of custom oscillator here, this indicator that's put together on several different things. So they got broader economic data that includes, their global risk index, which is incorporated to assess overall risk appetites, historical cycle alignments, and some other indicators here, includes waiting liquidity, et cetera, all, you know, their take on what creates a healthy or unhealthy business cycle. And this post claims that there is no four-year cycle that's dictated by the, you know, decrease in the supply of Bitcoin, the halvings every 4 years, which is a popular explanation for Bitcoin's price cycles that, you know, happen about every 4 years. This guy says it's not related so much to the halving, but to the business cycles. And you can see the correlation there. So what do you guys think about this one? Is this a replacement explanation for Bitcoin's price cycles, or is this complementary to the halving, which, you know, has that sort of instinctual correlation because you decrease the rates of new Bitcoin that's coming out. So there's some kind of supply shock. That's the thesis of the halving cycles. So what do you guys think about this alternative idea?
I definitely think this is a way you could frame it if that's what ends up playing out. I really appreciate what Corey, CEO of Swan, has kind of talked about on this point, is cycles aren't dead until they die. And he actually put out a poll kind of asking folks on X, you know, what's the percent likelihood? Is there a 50% chance higher of a higher or lower Bitcoin price in 2026? And a majority voted that, you know, it's a greater than 50% chance we see a higher Bitcoin price in 2026. He then comes back and says, hey, everyone has short memories, right? So I appreciate the, hey, we need to see what happens before we start calling these things. So, you know, if that was your thesis, I think that's a decent way to frame it. It's, you know, the next 6 months, I really want to see how that plays. And then into next year, everything I'm seeing leads me to want to believe a higher Bitcoin price in 2026. We've been in a bear market, according to this post, until that point happens. These next few months, I just think can be interesting, and, you know, models can be destroyed, as we've seen in the past.
All your models are destroyed. Bitcoin goes to the moon.
I think both things can be true. My favorite sort of correlation charts to look at are Bitcoin price and NASDAQ. And Bitcoin boom cycles correlate very strongly with NASDAQ boom cycles, less so correlated during Bitcoin drawdowns and bear markets. But you can kind of pull from both of these and see why halvings do make sense to an extent and bull markets make sense to an extent. I brought this up earlier. The money printer will go. They will turn this thing on in the very near future, and that will shatter everyone's 18 months post-halving is when you get the new all-time high in Bitcoin. And as a result, it'll validate this claim, but then at the same time, it will also validate a new all-time high happening every single time after a halving. Both things can be true.
All right. One more chart here on markets. Bob Elliott tweeted out this chart and said that developed world governments are happy to sacrifice their currencies in order to save their bond markets.
My sensor. Brady with the filter.
That's right.
Pro filter, Brady. Okay. I see.
UG13 version.
Brady filtering out the spam. Yeah, sorry, were you going to keep going, Brady, before I...
For it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. And I'll read the tweet that's being quote-tweeted or whatever here. Looks like Japan intervened to bring 30-year JGB yield back down after it spiked earlier this week on news its next prime minister is a fiscal dove. Yield caps like this aren't the answer for Japan. They just lead to uncontrolled yen devaluation. We watched this movie in 2024. So this to me is like one of these truisms that the Bitcoin community has been right about for a long time, and with just like a good tagline. And we say like the currency is the release valve. Like that's what I see here. And Bob Elliott said it in more colorful language, but it's like you kind of have these, you know, triangles where like trilemmas where you can do a couple things, but you can't do all three things. And it's like you can't really control yields on your bond market and then not expect the currency to be affected whatsoever. And I think given the choice, they're always going to, this is Bob's point, like they're never going to be like, all right, let me let my nation's current, let me let my nation's government bond market go into chaos to save the like the purchasing power of the currency. If their options are those two things, they're almost always going to let the purchasing power of the currency go. You just see it time and time again. So that it's another example of that. But I guess that makes the point. I'll pause it there.
Yeah, it's just when you have the money printer, the value of the currency to you is zero. There's zero cost to create. So why wouldn't that be the thing that you let go? Because there's no incentive for the government, the Fed, the central bank itself, as there is no cost to them. You know, it's just push the costs onto all the currency holders. It's, you know, I don't have the answers for it, but.
Said another way, having the money printer is like, I don't know, being a drug dealer. And when you're a drug dealer and you want to get some new clientele, you offer them a little taste. It's free. Hey, here's a little bit of crack cocaine for you. I don't know if I could say that on this children's show, but that's what a drug dealer does. I give it to you for free. You get a little taste and then you got to come back for more. It's no different. It's literally what having the money printer is. It's like, it doesn't cost me anything to try to hook you on to my supply, get on my money supply, and then turn around. You're stuck. You're trapped. You've got to do what I say. You've got to give me your resources. You've got to give me good deals. I know we're talking about Japan here, but another one, I'm sure we'll end up talking about it at some point. There was a deal made between Argentina and the US to essentially trade $20 million worth of Argentinian pesos for US dollars. In what world does that make sense for the US to do other than get Argentina really entrenched in the dollar system and then us turn around and say, hey, buddy, now I want your resources. Now you need to give me favorable trade terms so I can give you more dollars because you only have 20 million US dollars. Like that's not going to get you very far as a country. As an individual, shit, I'll give you whatever you want for 20 million.
20 billion, right?
20 billion. Sorry.
Which I thought was funny. There's so the kind of Twitter quick comments to that situation today. If you guys have been on Twitter, is like, oh, the US government's going to buy pesos, but they're not going to buy Bitcoin. I get it. It's funny. But I thought what's even funnier was the amounts. If the US government does own 200,000 Bitcoin, which like we don't even know if that's true or not, but that's the walking around number that people think they own. At roughly 100K Bitcoin, that's 20 billion of Bitcoin. So like the amount, because my first reaction to the Argentina thing was like, oh, 20 billion is nothing, which it kind of is nothing for the US government. But that ironically is the amount of Bitcoin that they allegedly own. Go ahead, Q.
My favorite fun fact about Argentina, if no one is aware, but every single time the Argentinian government has issued a 20-year bond, they've defaulted. They've never had a 20-year bond go to full maturation. So to kind of like tie it back to this conversation about nation state bond issuance, this is another great example of the country in control, the drug dealer of money in the world, trying to prop up some other country's bond because they've never been able to actually reach maturation for a 20-year bond.
That's a wild stat. I did not know that about Argentina.
Yeah.
All right.
If you look at the biggest win,
one of the big billionaire Bitcoin believers, try saying that 10 times fast, has appeared on CNBC again. Mm-hmm. And just take a look and see what he had to say.
Winners, right? The biggest winners are gold. I think it's up 46, 47%. Bitcoin, I want to say it's up 50 or 60. I'm not even sure. There's a Morgan Stanley basket that's a retail flow basket that has all the meme stocks in it.
Right.
It's up 67, 68%. So it's really what retail jumps on. So crypto, digital gold, that's obviously something that's very, very appealing.
Does that mean you're jumping on all of that right now?
Well, I'd want to have positions in all of it, right, for sure. So if you said to me, what are going to be the winners? Yeah, again, we have this race.
Right.
The race, realistically, is certainly to the end of the year, because that's when everyone marks institutionally. And then you have to figure out what's going to go on in next year. So what would I want to have? I'd want to have a combination of gold, crypto, probably the NASDAQ. I think I want to say that I've said that before, and I think that's still the right one. And I think whatever the fastest horse is at this point in time probably has a good chance of being that on deck 31.
I wish these guys would stop saying crypto.
I know, right?
Because I'm pretty sure he's not holding crypto. He's holding Bitcoin. There's a difference there. Yeah, so this guy's been known for this phrase that he just repeated here in this clip as well. The fastest horse in Bitcoin is the fastest horse, which he said several times over the years. And now it seems like, gold is neck and neck with Bitcoin as the fastest horse, but seems to think that Bitcoin over the long run will continue to be the fastest horse. Any thoughts on PTJ, and why does it even matter that we, listen to guys like this about Bitcoin?
And I'll just tie back to what I said earlier about having a different class of investors. These are the guys buying Bitcoin, in the past year, 2 years. Are they going to react the same way? I think we just have this totally different class, this deep education, as they're adopting Bitcoin not for the hype. That's why they always got these thought articles, Bitcoin's a bubble, this, that. That's not what's happening with what Paul Tudor Jones just said, right? He understands the reasons behind adopting Bitcoin as a sound money versus the hype, technology, all these other potential things, right? So take that as you will.
I'm going to say something that I know Mr. Paul Tudor Jones, longtime Swan Signal Live listener, I don't mean to offend you when you hear me say this or compare you to Cramer. But to Alex's point, like the retail class of investor, the name Paul Tudor Jones probably goes over your head. For Wall Street, that's a name that you pay attention to when they make comments like this, because they've won in these markets so many times. So Wall Street hearing PTJ say this pays attention to it. Retail probably doesn't even know or care who he is or what his trade is. But this is a validating stamp to Wall Street to make a position or take a position on Bitcoin, or as PTJ said, and I'll cringe saying it, crypto, that they may otherwise have ignored until someone like him or other Wall Street bigwigs come out and say, no, this is something that's here to stay, and this is a trade that we're going to take.
Speaking of, should we get into what JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley said about Bitcoin this week?
Yes. I do have one more chart that I just found down at the bottom of my list. And we'll look at this. And then we've got some quick hits on Lightning Yield, Morgan Stanley, Square's announcement this week. Luxembourg and Germany made some news as well. So we'll hit those five things. I did find this one more chart that I do think is important to show. This is institutional demand for Bitcoin continuing to outweigh new supply. You can see new supply in the gray. And last year, insto demand drastically outpaced new Bitcoin released. And this year, it's even more so. So what does this mean? I mean, this is kind of what I've been talking about with these charts and predicting that there won't be 80%+ bear markets ever again in Bitcoin, because we've got so much big money coming into the space now that, if you go down 30-40%, that is a strong buying opportunity from professional traders. And I don't think they'll panic quite as much as, retail does or has in these past cycles. So I think there's a floor on the declines, the bear markets, or the bear drops, you could say, because of what this chart is showing us right here from the past 2 years.
I think you nailed it. I think I was going to relate it back to that same, this is why we're in a different market. I also think it's funny because I can remember listening to tons of Bitcoin content in 2020 and 2021, where people did make the claims of the institutions are here, cycles are dead, super cycle. And look, predicting the future is hard. I'm not criticizing them too much. In hindsight, that was clearly wrong. But I do think they were just one cycle off. Now I think it is correct to say the institutions are here. The data shows it a million times over. And that's why you're seeing the price action and volatility is dramatically different.
John, let me pose a question to that statement. Because
yeah,
big picture, I do agree. But if we actually like really look at it with a magnifying glass, 2020 was when MicroStrategy began the process of acquiring their Bitcoin treasury, opening the door for the first publicly traded company to hold Bitcoin on their balance sheet. And then we actually saw in early 2021, Elon Musk and Tesla announced that they too will not only hold Bitcoin, but for a brief window of time, you could have bought a car with Bitcoin. They've since reversed that decision. And I just posed this question to the class. If they had never, they being Tesla and Elon, had never reversed that decision, do you guys think that timeline of the broader Wall Street and institutional capital would have entered the market earlier? Or do you attribute this entirely to the ETFs getting launched last year, which is what I believe is why we saw the high spike in institutional demand in 2024 and 25?
I don't think it would have played out materially differently if they kept that in. I think it was a function of we were just too early and the people running those institutions, Saylor and Tesla, Elon, they're just the eccentric early people willing to like take a swing. And I think that was going to be true regardless of how they executed it. I think you could make an argument that that's probably better. Because if there were a bunch of institutions who followed suit and then 2022 played out the way it did with Celsius, Voyager, BlockFi, FTX, 3 Hours Capital, et cetera, and price going from 60 to 15, it probably would have been harmful for Bitcoin adoption because all those hypothetical institutions that got in would have been like, this is a disaster. People would have either lost their jobs or had a lot of career damage. So I think it's probably better that that cycle happened the way it did. All the Ponzi's and scams died the way they did. And then you kind of flush things out. You set a base for like what I think is much healthier institutional adoption. Plus then you had the ETFs give a vehicle for them to actually do it. So I have a hard time seeing that it really could have been any other way.
All right, we've got 5 quick hits. Morgan Stanley, John asked for this one. Another milestone, Saylor tweets about Morgan Stanley's opening the door to wealth clients, says it's another milestone for Bitcoin's institutional adoption. Why is this a big deal?
Yeah, you always have to read, like, anytime there's a financial advisor allows clients to buy Bitcoin, you always have to read like one or two layers down, because a lot of times it'll be like, oh, they're allowing it, but it's only for clients who have a few million dollars in assets, and they have to, the advisor can't decide it. The client has to come to them. Solicitation, and the client has to sign something that says I want like the ultimate aggressive risk profile, you know, all this kind of hoops that cause not that many clients to actually do it. From everything I can tell with this Morgan Stanley thing, it truly is opening the door. Granted, the announcement just came out today. I did check with a friend who's a Morgan Stanley advisor, and he confirmed, he's like, yeah, the email's in my inbox, and it seems like there are very few restrictions. Like I said, it came out today. Let's wait a little bit longer to review that. But it seems like they truly are opening it up to their client base.
We've got Luxembourg. Their sovereign wealth fund has announced they will buy Bitcoin for the first time with 1% of its portfolio, which is 7 million euros. Is that right? Seems really small for a sovereign wealth fund. Okay. So yeah, I mean, just another country. I don't know if you guys have anything else to say about this, but another country dipping its toes into putting Bitcoin in their sovereign wealth fund or treasury.
I don't know why this is just a weird core memory, but when I was a kid, I used to love reading the Guinness Book of World Records, like picture book version. And I just will forever remember Luxembourg has the highest wealth per capita of any country in the world. That's my fun fact on this topic.
First result on the interwebs says they have a population of 672,000 people. So I'm pretty sure there's like small neighborhoods within Manhattan probably have more than that. It's a tiny place.
Let's go over to Germany. The German chance. No, he didn't say lazy specifically. He didn't use that word. That's I guess, summary of what he said in many more words. So Germans could be forced to work into their mid-70s as the country faces a reckoning over what its chancellor sees as a culture of laziness. A panel of experts has recommended Friedrich Merz, the German chancellor, that the age of retirement should be raised to 73 by 2060, up from the current 65. So that's a big raise of 8 years. So let's see. He didn't actually explicitly call Germans lazy. Let's see what it said here. He said that he emphasized in the speech the need for Germans to, quote, work more and above all, more efficiently, while dismissing ideas like the 4-day work week and excessive focus on, quote, work-life balance. Been widely interpreted by media and economists as implying a culture of laziness or an accusation of idleness. So you need to work harder and you need to work longer. Why might this even be happening? Why does this need to happen? Is it? I don't think it's necessarily because of the culture of laziness.
No, it's because Germany sold their Bitcoin 3 years ago.
That's right. They sold a lot of Bitcoin.
That's it.
Yeah, this is where you go when nothing stops this train. You're just trying to find revenue and trying to save your, you know, retirement Ponzi's from their inevitable doom. And, you know, the subsequent generations end up being harmed by these Social Security and similar retirement schemes around the world. And it's just another example of the older generation stealing from the younger generations, which has happened through fiat debasement very directly, causing inflation and the devaluation of the dollar, causing millennials and after millennials, Gen Alpha, these younger generations to not have access to as much wealth, to be able to buy assets, to try to actually avoid at least somewhat the debasement of the dollar. By buying stocks. And there's not that many. It's a small percentage, relatively small percentage of Americans who are able to own any meaningful amount of assets like stocks in order to offset fiat debasement. So this is just another way that these policies that enable and enrich generations end up passing the buck down to the younger generations. And then you have your chancellor call you lazy.
One other thing that I think sometimes we're so far removed, so many things have happened that we might have just forgotten this. Germany was one of the largest purchasers of Russian natural gas. And then we had the Nord Stream pipeline blow up. Russia is now sanctioned. You can't purchase their natural gas. So they've been paying a premium for liquefied natural gas from the US, driving up their energy costs, not only for the everyday citizens, but for the government as well. I'm not saying that explains it, but that could be a factor in why their economy is struggling, why they're calling on more people. Hey, we actually need to work more because we need our GDP to continue to grow to keep up with this increased energy cost that we don't see an end in sight for. So that's just something that I want to remind everyone and could be actually playing a larger factor into this that we're not thinking about.
Totally. And
go ahead, Alec.
Sorry, just to add a quick point that I would not be surprised to see these things in the U.S. as well. There have been conversations about pushing, you know, Social Security retirement age out farther. I looked up a few things. Some say 2033, some say 2035, when like the trust funds for Social Security will be completed. So
yep.
I don't think we're too far away.
I'm not holding out any hope that I see any money from all the payments I've made into social security.
Lazy Americans.
That's right.
The larger question I now have, I guess, Brady and John, for you guys. So the plan for Swan employees to unionize and ask for 4-day work weeks, we're just going to say no to that.
Yeah. That might happen to Swan after everyone's adopting 3-day work weeks. All right. Lightning Liquid Technologies has used some of their Bitcoin in treasury to stake into the Lightning network in a 60-day test. And they were able to generate, by, I guess, routing transactions, an 8.9% APR on a weighted basis, a strong proof point for potential Lightning-based monetization of treasuries. So this is actually a pretty big deal, in my opinion, as the Lightning network continues to grow, a way for the Lightning network to add a lot of liquidity to help transactions go through, larger transactions even. And if this is actually the case, it's also great for Bitcoin treasury companies to monetize their stash without having to sell or even lend it. They'll still have control over their Bitcoin.
I think that's the big point here. You now have this asset that you were strictly holding on your balance sheet as a reserve in the hopes or eye on the dollar fading away. But historically speaking, companies have done this. I mean, 2008 was a great expose on the fact that companies were being aggressive investing in other asset classes, bonds being one of them. And this, to like simplify it, but not make it a literal one for one, this allows you to create a return on your Bitcoin, no different than had you put your capital in treasuries or corporate bonds that have a certain guaranteed level of return. Now, it's not one for one because it's not a guaranteed return. And you don't actually know if, you know, the Lightning network consistently gives you that return quarter to quarter. Anything is higher than 0%. So it is, I think, a really interesting potential use case and could lead to greater adoption for other funds that they need to generate consistent returns to an extent rather than just hold an asset on the balance sheet.
Yeah, we get questions from people about yield, earning yield on Bitcoin. And thankfully, I think the industry has done a good job of not motivating people to like, hey, you got to earn yield on your Bitcoin. If anything, it's the opposite. They're like, be extremely, extremely skeptical of any activity that promises you yield on your Bitcoin. But I think there is a short list of things that, at least in theory, could provide yield on Bitcoin. And this routing of Lightning payments is one of them. I haven't looked into this deeply. It's, you know, it's just the headline. I hope it's legit. I hope that the numbers aren't, you know, manufactured in some way, but I'm optimistic for it because it's a way to earn legit yield on your Bitcoin. And if it works this way, it also shows that the Lightning network is being used. So I hope more opportunities like this present themselves.
And apparently Amboss, another Bitcoin company,
shout out Jesse Schrader, founder. Yep,
shout out Jesse. And they apparently got 9.7% APR from their test. Promising early results there. And finally, we'll end with Square. Actually, let me pause this real quick. Square announced that they've rolled out to all of their stations, their devices, I guess, at businesses, small, medium-sized businesses around the country and world, to be able to accept Bitcoin and then cash it out directly. They can save it as Bitcoin into their Cash App account, or they can convert the Bitcoin into dollars automatically, have that added to their Cash App account. And Square has a lot of devices, a huge market out there. And this is a way to really bootstrap, in my opinion, the medium of exchange function of Bitcoin. This is a 1-minute ad about the product explaining what they're doing. And play here.
Bitcoin can help diversify how you spend, save, and invest in your business, especially when every swipe of a credit card eats away at your bottom line. Let's say you run a local grocery chain. Most purchases are small, like a bag of produce or a gallon of milk. so credit card fees start to add up fast. With Square, you can now accept Bitcoin with zero payment processing fees, no chargebacks, and near instant access to funds. Then you choose how money settles into your account, whether in USD or Bitcoin, instantly and right from your Square dashboard. Whether you're aiming for short-term goals or planning for the long haul, you can automatically convert a percentage of your daily card sales into Bitcoin. No extra steps, no added complexity. It's a smart, seamless way to build savings in the background, all while keeping your day-to-day cash flow predictable. And when tax time comes, you'll get the paperwork you need right where you find your reports and bank statements. Bitcoin is just another way for you to take control of how your business makes and spends money. Enable Bitcoin payments and conversions in your Square dashboard. Head to squareup.com/Bitcoin to learn more.
You know, massive shout out to Jack Dorsey and his team. He's been building out, you know, really solid Bitcoin products to store your Bitcoin, to use your Bitcoin, to buy Bitcoin, and for now merchants to accept Bitcoin, and doing it, in my opinion, the right way. He's also involved in, I think, building hardware mining now, which is really important for decentralization of Bitcoin mining, and gives the United States a competitor to Chinese and other Asian countries producing most of the ASICs that are used to mine Bitcoin around the world. So shout out to Jack. He's been doing a lot of great work for Bitcoin, and he's a legend, in my opinion.
I see this as a growing trend. Just, you know, when I go out, I've started to see, and I've brought this up numerous times in the past, surcharges if I use my credit card. It originally was just at like mom and pop type shops, but I'm even seeing it at restaurants. We've historically always seen like, oh, like must spend minimum of $5 to use a credit card. I just went through this over the weekend where I got so annoyed that I didn't buy enough to reach the credit card minimum. So they were like, oh, you have to either buy more or give us cash. This will be, and it ties back to the conversation around Lightning, it will start to eat away at the credit card company's market share. But also, did you guys know that credit card companies have a clause that merchants are not allowed to pass that charge on to customers, and they cannot refuse customers using credit cards? They can't actually install minimums on their customers. So you can, if you wanted to, complain to the credit card companies if a merchant tries to do that to you. Not saying I've done it, just saying I've learned that that is actually a rule instituted by these credit card companies.
I don't even see how you could enforce that. You just add it to the pricing of your products.
Exactly. But they don't. A lot of times they'll just be like, oh, it's going to be.
I think they do. I mean, they, you know, not that you see, but the price on the shelf has it baked in. You know, they don't do it transparently at the actual point of sale, but.
It's becoming a lot more common to see as a line item on your receipt. And that's, I think, the more startling thing. It used to just be like, oh, it's going to be 50 cents to use your credit card at like the farmer's market. But now, like, yep. I'll sit at a restaurant in Venice Beach and there will be a literal line item said credit card charge.
Okay.
If you've ever ran a business, you know how much of a pain taking payments is. It's expensive. And chargebacks are a huge problem in many industries. So it is solving a real world problem for these merchants, these companies that sell anything. I think there's a couple more pieces that are required here, right? There's a big incentive that stops people from spending their Bitcoin, being a tax on Bitcoin. I saw Jack, multiple people tweeted, we need the de minimis tax exemption. So that would be amazing. But yeah, it's amazing to see. It's going to obviously spread the brand of Bitcoin further as well, just being that as an option. But I do see probably most of the early adopters of this are going to use that convert to cash option, which, you know, hey, it's fine as long as you'll take my Bitcoin when I come to spend with you. It's going to attract more customers to their business if they have that enabled, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, the capital gains tax on Bitcoin sales, which... purchasing something with Bitcoin this counts as a sale of your Bitcoin, is definitely a big hurdle to jump for medium of exchange adoption. So you're right. We need to get that done.
Well, how great would it be if we do get an 80% drawdown and then you start spending your Bitcoin and then can mark those losses as part of the transaction of spending it.
Hey, big brain. All right, guys, thank you so much. Happy Friday to everybody. I just want to tell you a little bit about Swan real quick. Let's see here. Let me get that in the right spot. We help you build wealth, generational wealth with Bitcoin. We build strong relationships with all of our clients. These three guys are part of the Swan Private team. You'll get a dedicated Swan Private representative, a Bitcoin expert, just a text away to ask all of your questions. That is Swan Private, your partner for generational wealth. We also have Swan Vault and Swan IRA. Swan Vault is our advanced Bitcoin cold storage solution, a 2 of 3 multi-signature collaborative custody. You can hold your own Bitcoin, have control, sovereign control over your Bitcoin, as is one of the great properties of Bitcoin, is that you can hold it yourself. And we can do that with you, so you don't have to go it alone, which I think is a great way for people to self-custody, especially if you're relatively new to Bitcoin or just don't want to worry about having to do that all on your own. Here's how it works. You have 3 keys. You need 2 for a transaction. You have a cloud key attached to your Swan account. You can use that in conjunction with one of your hardware wallets. We use Blockstream Jades to create a transaction. If you don't want to or somehow can't work with Swan, if Swan goes away, for whatever reason, you have your 2 keys here and you can move your Bitcoin however you want. Or you are completely in control of your Bitcoin. Swan cannot move it. We also have an IRA product. We have a nice calculator here you can play with, put your own assumptions in and see how well your retirement account might do if you add Bitcoin to it. And it's really simple to onboard, really fast. You can do rollovers and transfers from an existing IRA. It's a great way to start your stack and to get it jump started. So definitely check us out. We'd love to work with you. We focus only on Bitcoin. We are Bitcoin experts, Bitcoin believers, every single one of us at Swan. And we would love the chance to work with you over the long term to build your Bitcoin wealth. All right. Take care, everybody.